Welcome back to WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. It's been a long time coming. We're doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. I'm running low on Ravens tickets, and they've hooked me up with holiday tickets, and I'm at Gertrude's, and we're at the BMA. I feel like the least cultured human here today, but it has been wonderful seeing people here who look like they've been all over the world. We're Gertrude's. It turns out that John Shields and I are related. We're family without realizing it until we figured it out yesterday when my son's wife, okay, my son and his wife are in Amsterdam. I said I was coming to Gertrude's. And my daughter-in-law's mother, what does that make her to me?
Wow.
My daughter-in-law's mother.
I don't know.
John Shields is her cousin.
Your daughter-in-law's mother is John Shields' cousin.
Right. So that makes my daughter-in-law a cousin of John Shields.
It's Smaltimore, right?
That's exactly what I texted him.
This is what happens.
Well, I'll tell you what. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. I'm giving some tickets away. We're doing some win donation stuff. We're going to do some stuff with Jiffy Lube MultiCare as well. I even brought my gavel here. I feel like Richard Scherer on Square Off from Rascal Global. It's a crab claw with a beer opener. So it's,
oh, nice.
I mean, this is a two-for-one special. Dan Rodericks is here, my friend. He has a poster on the wall. You lured me here on a wintry night last year. By the way, they have a 34th Street motif going on in this joint. I went from 34th Street. I had broccoli over at Ekeben, one of my favorite things.
Oh,
over
yeah,
Hamden.
That's good. That
so we had some
dish.
Broccoli. It was about 12 degrees. We went to 34th Street. I'm like, it's really nice. Let's go see Dan's show. And then we like parked and ran in here. We had to pee. We were late. We sat down. And I think I told you this last time. And like your show, Baltimore, you have no idea, that opened here. I was here on opening night. A lot of people I knew in the crowd. A lot of Baltimore Sun alums. And we all came to you and said, this thing's so great. You need to do this again. You acted all humble. We were down at Fadley's. And you were kind of portending that maybe it wouldn't happen. Pick up the plot, because people can go and see our podcast from Fadley's. It was December 11th of last year, so almost a year ago.
Wow.
Like, literally.
Right
and
after
you did
the
this
show.
Thing, yeah. But you didn't do it as a holiday thing. You did it as a, well, let's just do a weekend of Thanksgiving, sort of. That was where you were with it, right?
Yeah, the play does have a little bit of have a holiday touch to it.
That's why I'm having my holiday party here at the BMA next week.
No, it's great. Well, first of all, thank you for having me back again.
I love you, Dan Rodericks.
Well, thank you, Nestor. I appreciate all the support you've given me. And
I've known him 40 years. you're a mentor to me. I had John Eisenberg on last week. Oh. I love having people like you in my life doing important work, writing books, making plays. It's just so important. Yeah. You know, you keep me young.
I know. Well, I had, when I got to Baltimore, mostly older men and women who nurtured me along in my newspaper career and taught me about the city, taught me about
I had Rasig on yesterday. and literally yesterday, Rasig and Ron Cassie yesterday. Ron really wants to come to show. Rasig, I text him in your show. Rasig's in your show. He's in your show.
He's holding the Ursay dummy.
He's holding the dummy at Veterans Stadium.
Yeah.
Rasig's in your show.
Yeah.
And he's coming with me next week.
Oh, that's great.
So I think everybody that came last year wants to recruit somebody because your show there's nothing more Baltimore positive. It's a celebration of the good, bad, but the realness of our town.
Yeah, thank you for saying that. That's what I was hoping for. You know, we only did three performances last year.
Same weekend?
Last year was the first weekend of December. This year it's two weekends in December, a little bit later, December 8th and 9th, and December 14th, 15th, 16th. But anyway, we sold out those three shows, to my surprise. So we decided to do six this year. And I was a little worried about that. I said, how far can you go with this?
How many people are going to come back and do it again, like me, right?
Well, we've sold out so far. As of this recording, we've sold out five of the six shows. And the sixth show looks like it's headed constantly down in ticket sales. So,
how many people does this little theater hold here?
360. Well, we sell at 350 because that's according to the fire code.
Because some jackwagon like me might call you next Friday and say, I need another ticket.
Yeah. We're supposed to leave a space of 10 seats for people who have disabilities and need to sit in a certain place. But by the way, you keep mentioning the BMA. The Baltimore Museum of Art is really a jewel in the city. And having Gertrude's restaurant here is just another great aspect of
it. This place is packed.
Almost always is.
It's packed.
Yeah, the food's always good. It's consistent. And the theater, a lot of people don't even know that the BMA has a theater. I don't know if you've ever been here for that. It's a very comfortable theater at 350 seats, and we like the venue very much, the theater itself.
So I'm going to Springsteen on you. Springsteen decides to go, you know, after all this rock and roll, he's going to do a one-man show.
Yeah.
Not real dissimilar to your thing, but his was his life story. Yours is your Baltimore story.
Right. And it's just him, right?
It's just him and the guitar, singing some songs, whatever. But, like, he had to pick a theater. You know, like, what size? How did you pick this place? He picked the Walter Kerr Theater, I think, the first time, and then he went back and did a bigger theater the second time because he was very successful with it. Maybe you could have done one show at a big theater, right?
But this
is your relationship. This is the way you are.
I thought it was a little more intimate, right? At 350 seats, it's a more intimate theater than, say, Krauschauer Auditorium at Gauchers. I didn't want a 1,000-seat theater.
Right.
So I wasn't sure I could sell it. And
Once, let alone three times.
So I wanted a smaller place. And I was familiar with this place because back when I had my TV show in the 90s, Roderick's for Breakfast, we recorded a couple of shows in here. And I also did a theatrical performance of, well, they're all theatrical performances, of Death of a Salesman. It was a radio version of it. And
Poor Willie.
Yeah, Willie Loman. I was his friend Charlie. Mark Steiner played Willie Loman. We recorded that on this stage in here. So I'm familiar with this space, and I just think it needs to be used more. Also, they call it the Meyerhoff Auditorium. It's really a theater. I wish they would. I suggested to the BMA that they recall it in Meyerhoff Theater, because it really is. It's nice.
Well, I tell you what, we're here at the BMA. We're at Gertrude's. I have not had the crab cake. So Odette Ramos is going to come by a little later on. Councilwoman, she's vegan and had recommended the vegan crab cake. It's a zucchini sort of thing.
Yeah, it's good.
I've gotten to know John a little bit. He does crab cakes three different ways here. I don't know what I'm doing. But I had the fried oysters. They were ridiculous. I had a berry. I was really good. I'm doing yoga tonight.
You said it before we started. This could be the beginning of the Oyster Tour.
Maryland Oyster Tour, 25th anniversary. Yeah. I'm already on that. I was going to do it this summer, but just issues with the Ravens and the season and the Crab Cake Tour and things I wanted to do, I just didn't do it. And I'm going to do it this year. I was really inspired by Damie at Fadley's. You were there a year ago with me.
Yeah.
I had never really had fried oysters. I've been to a lot of bull and oyster roast and have raw oyster stew.
Right.
But I never order oysters
because
there's always something else on the menu. Like, I'll get the rockfish or I'll get the shrimp or whatever. Right. She brought me these fried oysters and I ate a couple of them.
Man,
I'm like,
they're good.
So now, like, this has changed my world today. I mean, this thing here, I mean, I'm 2 for 2 on the oyster tour here. Dan Rogers is here. The show is Baltimore. You have no idea. So I set this up 2 months ago thinking, poor Dan, he's going to have trouble selling tickets. Huh? Let's put you're so. And then you laid this on me that you're doing this courtroom thing, and you're actually here putting that together as well. You're like a band. You're on to your next project already. You know,
well, that's the next play. After the play last year, I thought, I've got more stories in me. A lot of people said, you know, they found this unique, a newspaper guy dramatizing his. The stories he's told.
Being a newspaper guy, right, literally.
Yeah. So I thought, well, I've spent a lot of time in courtrooms at trials over the years, a lot of time. And there's so many stories that are drawn from courtroom. And the courtroom scene is itself theatrical in nature, you know, with adversarial actors and a judge. And so I thought, use the same format, a series of stories within an hour and a half play performance, where I narrate and others act out or reenact these trials. So I use the exact words and language that I recorded in my column over the years. And that's going to be our February play called Baltimore Docket. And it's 7 scenes, 7 different stories, all set in the same courtroom.
These 7 stories you're going to tell. If I work with you at the Evening Sun in the 90s and late 80s.
Some are from back then,
These are the 7 stories you want to tell in full color. And Baltimore, you have no idea. And I don't want to retell the story. And quite frankly, Dan, because I'm going to see you again next Friday, I'm bringing everyone I know literally to the show on
That's
Friday.
Great.
And we're going to do a little entertaining here at the BMA as well. And I don't want to reenact it, but I remember scenes from the Lord Baltimore Hotel. I remember little things about it. But you, in writing this as a writer and a bit of a thespian and a self-proclaimed ham, as proclaimed here, in making these stories come to life, what about Baltimore You Have No Idea and the seed for that led you? Because I have a feeling you probably got three or four more of these kinds. Because you're having fun with this, dude. You look young. You look vibrant. you look like you've been fishing and fly fishing. You look so relaxed, you know.
Well, thank you. Well, it does give me, you know, having your supportive words and last year's response to the play does give me, you know, more confidence to move on. I feel like I can do it, do another play. And I think the Baltimore Docket is going to be a good play. So I thought, okay, I got so many stories to tell. No, there's no one story that I can turn into a play, but I got seven or eight stories I could turn into mini plays within a play. And originally,
like Love American style.
Just like that. Yeah, just like that. So, anyway, I thought, well, I could stand on stage and tell stories because I've done a lot of speaking engagements. Probably you have too. But then I kind of chickened out on that, and I thought, why not bring other actors on the stage to act out, to play the roles of people that I'm talking about in telling these stories? So then I said, well, then I need a segue to move from scene to scene, set the mood as we move along to, you know, something to match the emotional pace of the play. So I came up with music, a live piano. So we have a live piano on stage, which is unusual for a play, but it helps make those transitions, remember, from scene to scene. And then someone came backstage after the first performance and said, this is a person whose opinion I respect, too. I said, this is unique. This is a newspaper guy acting out stories that he already wrote, seven stories, eight stories within a hour and a half.
A dramatization, a comedization.
Right. Because some of the stories are funny. And using music to make the transition. Multimedia show. I mean, we had big video on the screen at the back of the stage.
Something maybe you couldn't have dreamed of 20, 30 years ago, right? Like, is that where your head was,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Well, you made television shows every week, though.
Yeah, I did.
And you acted. I mean,
I did some acting.
Yeah.
But I also thought this would be the best sort of distillation of my skills. I mean, I got an ear for dialogue. I imitate people. I'm a mimic. So I listen. I eavesdrop a lot. You know, I hear how people talk, and I've listened in courtrooms, listened to testimony for hours and hours and hours. So I thought, I like the stage. I love theater. I said, this probably is what I should do, is bring everything together, you know, stories from newspaper work and my interest in theater. And, you know, here we are.
Well, for the show this year, and some folks may not see it, are you videoing it?
Okay.
I asked you that before because I'm like, somewhere, I mean, I have a video. I was in Oliver in 1982.
Really?
I was the Artful Dodger, you know.
No kidding.
Consider yourself at home.
Consider yourself one of the furniture.
I do anything
part of the furniture,
for
right?
you, dear.
Anything for you, dear.
Sorry. So anyway, so I did that, and I found the old video cassette.
You were the Artful Dodger. That's
and it was
that's
a piano.
So appropriate.
It was at Colgate Elementary. I mean, the guy who was the principal at the time, he looked at me like Johnny Bravo when I went through, and he's like, Dodger, you're Dodger. I'm like, I can't sing, I can't dance, you're in my show. And the next thing, it was at elementary school, but we had a videotape. It's online. So I have...
It's online?
This is what I'm saying. Even in 1982, they had a stand-up little camcord video.
Did
somebody do that for you last year, or is somebody doing that?
Well...
Go ahead.
We have a plan to do it right, like three cameras, shoot two shows.
Is Scorsese coming in?
He's been invited. No,
okay.
I don't know. So the idea is to get it recorded, get it edited, and then I'm not sure what we're going to do with it. And we have a couple ideas about that. But you know, most theater productions are not videotaped. They're not streamed.
They're not meant
out
for that. Yeah.
Yeah, because they want people to come to the theater. But we're just doing this. I have an LLC now, but I don't have a theater company. So we don't have a permanent fixture here like Everyman Theater or Center Stage. I understand why they wouldn't do it, because they want people to come to their theater. But
you're trying to get this as many people as you can get it to, I would think, right, at this point?
Well, yeah. I have to think about streaming it in some way or broadcasting it. So we are thinking about
$299. Make the investment. Click here. Dan Rodericks is here, a longtime columnist, my friend, author, writer, and now thespian. You'll laugh, you'll cry, you'll sigh. I probably did all of that. The stories of Baltimore, you have no idea. And again, I don't want to give it all away, but you had a lot of things to call from. That you picked this comedic thing about a mobster's wife telling a reporter things she clearly shouldn't be telling him.
Right.
And then all of the sort of malaprop-y, you know, it's not the heat, it's the humility. And these things that I'm familiar with your, which is still funny. You still laugh at that. It'll never not be funny, right?
Yeah.
So you put these stories, is there cutting room floor stuff that would make a Baltimore You Have No Idea part two, like it, maybe better than Smokey and the Bandit or Jaws 2 were?
Do you know how many columns I've written?
I know.
How many columns do you think I've written?
4,000.
Keep going.
Really?
Well, Nestor, I started writing a column in January of 79, 3 days a week. It'll be 40, how many years is that? It'll be 45 years this January, right?
About as long as I've had my KISS belt buckle that I'm wearing today, you know.
Well, I've written more than, pretty close to 6,400 columns. Now, they don't all lend themselves to dramatization.
Right.
But there's a lot of good stories in there, that some of which I've forgotten about.
Well, I think the one thing about your play is you absolutely have this soul about people who came into your life in some sort of crisis way because of you being a reporter, you know, some sort of crisis, and you intervene with a notebook. And I love the jacket you wear because it's very Joe Friday. Like, you almost are part detective. Yeah. And part reporter, which is what a reporter is.
What a reporter is, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And trying to cut through who's BSing you and whatnot.
Yeah.
So I would just say from the dramatization of that and what really happened, you know what I mean? The reality and the dramatization part.
Yeah, it's pretty close, actually.
Yeah, you have a notebook out, right?
No, listen, I went back to these old columns that I wrote, including the very first column I ever wrote, January 8th, 1979. And I pulled quotes out of it and use that in the dialogue in the play. So there's one scene with a caricature who's not really a character, but a guy who portrays a political boss. He is a composite of many different people I've met in politics over the years. He's not a real character, but that's the only time I veer from
reality.
The reality of, and I use the actual names of people.
So not only is it Baltimore, you have it's completely nonfiction. I mean, it's
as a
production.
It is, except for that one scene with a caricature rather than a real character.
What about your courtroom thing? Is that all real?
All real. They're all cases that I wrote about. And again, I went back into the Sun archives and looked at how I described these scenes and the quotes that I used from people. Pull them out and
that's a journalist in you. You can't even be creative when you're being creative, because the truth is stranger than fiction.
You know, one of the themes of this, it's true in Baltimore. It's probably true everywhere. But one of the things I say in the second play, The Docket, is the title of that play could very well have been Baltimore, You Don't Have to Make It Up. Because the stories, there's so many good stories.
Well, I mean, you're going to work on this. I'm working on the Baltimore positive thing here.
Yeah.
But you could work off of this. And I think this may sustain you for a while. Because I think the newspaper writing column thing, after you've done 6,400 of them. And Dan, I speak to you now as a 55-year-old guy. You met me, I was 17 years old, right?
I remember,
I mean, I've known you for 40 years, right?
Yeah.
The notion that I could take phone calls on a Monday morning after the Ravens lose... After doing it for 22 years pretty seriously.
Yeah.
The fact that now it'll be 32 years I've been on the air on December 13th.
Wow, good for you.
The fact that...
That's very good.
The thought that I could go back and do that again.
Yeah.
Or be a baseball beat writer, and which they have AI doing that now for Sports Illustrated. You know, writing...
What are you saying? You're saying you wouldn't go back to that?
No, because I want to be on to something. I'm here talking to you in an art museum
in
the middle of Gertrude's over a crab cake and oysters about food, travel, courtrooms, Baltimore.
Much more. There's a big world out here.
And it's not just because it's bye week, you know, or the Ravens are 9-3, because I talked about them all morning on Monday, and I've just created more space in my life
for
other things. And the way that
you have to.
You not writing a column with Jack Lemmon in the corner as though it's 1986 forever and there's no internet and you're that guy. You were that guy. Like, I talked to John Eisenberg about this. You know,
do people know who Jack
Lemmon
is?
You know?
Who are you talking about? You said Jack Lemmon. They think of the actor, the late actor.
He looked more like Lou Grant.
Lou Grant.
Yeah, he looked more like Ed Asner.
He was the managing editor of the old Evening Sun. He was the,
Can I give a lottery plug here? I don't know if I told this.
Sure.
No, I'm going to give a lottery plug. These are the lottery scratch-offs. Okay, so in 1986, and I was employed January 6, 1986, through January 15th of 1992. I was there 6 years and 9 days at the Evening Sun.
It seemed longer, but...
The sports section, I did the Agate. You know, the
Agate
page.
Yeah,
and I did music. I was a music critic. I unearthed my Paul Stanley. Paul Stanley had me in his hotel suite at 1 o'clock in the morning for dinner. Talked for an hour in his suite after a concert in 1990. I found the tape. Towson Transfers unearthed it this week. And instead of me asking, it slowed down the tape. And it sounds good. And I ran it this week. So my period at the Sun was this beautiful thing. But I did everything from sitting with David Bowie and Robert Plant to doing the lottery numbers. Okay, so every night, my primary job that allowed me to cover high school sports, go to Hammer Jacks, sit in the press box and eat the little crab cakes at I had to do the Agate page. It was my job.
You packed a lot in 6 years.
I did.
You did.
So every night I put the lottery numbers in, and I would get it off the Maryland wire, and I would type them in. We didn't have cut and paste, okay? So I would type them in, and I put it in there. Bob Hieronymus' thing was there. It was all this stuff was going on. And I screwed up the lottery numbers. This is when it was... Right?
Oh.
Right. Right. So Jack Lemmon was a nice man in the corner that I met when I got my job. And, yo, you're the young whippersnapper from the News American. Nussgaard says you're going to, Marlo, they're gonna take you under your wing. You're gonna be John Steadman one day. You know what I mean, right?
So, wait a minute, but you screwed up the lottery numbers?
So, dude, I tell this to John Martin all the time as I give away lottery sponsors this show. Thank you to the Maryland Lottery. But I would mess up the numbers, and Jack got exasperated. Jack Gibbons was my boss, and Jack loved me, but I just wore him out, you know?
Yeah.
And I screwed up the number, and someone called the paper thinking they won $1 million or portended to, or that's what the scare tactic
that's
was.
That's like a cardinal
to
sin.
To an 18 or 19-year-old kid.
Yeah.
And I screwed, like... It was fireable, but I was sort of an unfireable kid because they liked me. I was in the union. I was in the guild. But nonetheless, I screwed up the lottery number. So Jack called me into the corner and he was like, son, you just can't do this again. We all love you. Don't screw up the lottery. I almost screwed my whole career up.
I don't understand something. How did you screw it up? Because you get a wire service sends you the numbers,
6, 17, 23, 37, and I hit a 38 or 36.
All right, this is back.
So, you know what I mean?
This is before we had...
We had computers. It was a VDT.
No,
I just screwed it up.
That wasn't really a computer.
I didn't cut and paste it. It was a VDT.
It's not like you would have today.
It was a green type.
It was a video display terminal.
So when I say Jack Lemmon to you, you know what I'm saying?
Good old Jack.
I guess the point was, back in 1986, you're doing that. You knew the world was going to change. You didn't know how it was going to change, whether it's online, all of this stuff, that you wouldn't be... writing. I mean, I thought in 1986 that if I ever got a job as John Steadman, I would write for 43 years as the columnist.
My dad
was so pissed at me when I left the paper because he thought I was going to get a gold watch, right? I mean, this is in 1992, right, when I left. What you're doing with your career, where John Eisenberg is having, is that the Sun in 07? Or long, long time ago now, right?
He left the Sun. You know, I'm still there.
I know.
But we've had so many people from the downsizing that took place over the last 30 years have had gone off to, some have stayed in journalism. Many have gone into public relations or other fields altogether. You know, restaurants.
But you were always doing TV. You did a variety show. You did news stuff. You did Man on the Street. Like, the fact that you're doing this at this point in your life and this Eric Bogosian moment happened to you and struck you down, it feels like you feel like you're swimming in the right direction as a person. You know, for anybody who's been in your audience and you've been recognized by a dozen people in the first 20 minutes sitting here, somebody thought it was your podcast and not mine at the thing. and people, Matt Campbell, by the way, this is for you at the convention. This is another one of your fans. So people know who you are and what you do. This is what you're doing now. And I think that that's just... That's a beautiful thing to me.
Yeah, and I feel like it's another extension of my creative spirit, you know, what I want to accomplish and stories I want to tell. And there's a great audience out there. I mean, I still get really good feedback from readers of The Sun. People still do read the newspaper.
There's a loyalty factor to your integrity, and you're trying to be honest with people. Yeah. Like, I piss people off all the time, right? I mean, with truth. I piss you off.
You and I are going to
have a stadium segment in a couple minutes, and we'll see how it goes. But,
okay.
But like, there is a point where your candor will offend people, and your politics will offend people.
I've done that too. Yeah, I've been there too. You should see some of my emails.
But there's also a point where you chase people away, and I know this as an entrepreneur. Yeah. They're saying, "What's your audience? How many clicks did you get?" Well, 20-30% of my 20-30% of my crowd, we chased away because the basic part of what we do is sometimes not for everyone.
When you write about politics and different ideologies, what's going on in the country today, you can quickly alienate people. They seem far more vulnerable to alienation than ever before. Hyper-partisanship, you know. I remember when I first got started, if someone didn't like what I wrote, they would write me a letter. Or they'd call me on the phone. We'd have a discussion about it.
But they wouldn't cancel their Sun subscription.
No, and they wouldn't say the kind of things I hear now.
Of course,
It's become so nasty.
I was a mail guy. I used to bring everybody's mail.
Yeah.
So, you know, when Eisenberg and I, the guys who got the hate mail were always the columnists, right? I mean, Stedman is beloved as he was. I mean, he got as much hate mail. You know, it's like me being on the radio. I thought, when I met you, I'm going to do a show and I'm going to be like Chuck Thompson. They're just all going to love me. And then I've watched the Angelos thing for 30 years. And I mean, it is...
But that's a different thing. Yeah, you're an opinionated guy. You have thoughts. I'm an opinionated guy too. I don't know if that works. You know, people who do broadcasting and work for teams, basically, right?
Sure.
They need to be well liked. They can't just be liked. They got to be well liked, and they can't alienate people.
What about respected?
That's a different thing.
What about respected, though?
Oh, well,
these people respect you, Dan. I mean, I'm just saying.
Some people do.
But the people who are still there every day, there's an there's a loyalty, and there are people who still stay with. I feel this. It's been 32 years. I mean, that is the blessing.
The blessing is if you're
honest with people, through the good and the bad, they'll come. They'll stay with you.
You get points for just being around for a long time too. People respect you because. If you're still doing, you're still in this game, you're still talking, commentary, you're still involved in the life of the city, the life of this community, this state, you know, people respect you because you still care and you're still interested in it. You know?
Well, Mac asked me when you're going to do a podcast again. That's what Mac Campbell from the Convention Center. I told him I'd shout it out. So that's his big question. When's your podcast? You know.
I feel like Forrest Gump when he goes running and then he had to stop and he decided he had run enough. I did 426 episodes of the Roughly Speaking podcast for the Baltimore Sun, and I felt like I'd had enough.
That's my point with columns. That's my point with, at any point, taking phone calls from sports radio, there was just sort of like, I've done 22,000 hours of that or some ridiculous amount of time. Yeah. I've done every fire the coach, bench the quarterback. I've taken all the race bait. I've done all that.
Yeah.
I want to do something different and more, and I think that's what you're doing here. And I have massive respect for anybody that does that.
That's how I feel about it, too. Yeah.
Those who play rock and roll and then go do jazz, God bless them.
Yeah.
Dan's here. Baltimore, You Have No Idea is the current play. The next play is Baltimore Docket, correct?
Baltimore Docket.
Okay.
Yeah, in February.
Absolutely. And there's still like 5 tickets left for the last show. jump on. How do people get the tickets and get all that?
So it's called, the play is called Baltimore, You Have No Idea. Our website is youhavenoidea.org, which is now the name of my formed LLC.
Nice.
Whoa. It's called You Have No Idea LLC. So the website...
Is this your first LLC?
I'm not really a businessman, right? So anyway, So it's youhavenoidea.org. The tickets are $27, which is the inflation fighter price because it's the same price as last year.
I'm sniffing these. I'm sorry.
Why are you sniffing?
Well, they're scented, and I just want to make sure that they actually smell like what they said they were going to smell like. So, go ahead. Keep going.
That's all right.
Don't remind me. You're looking at me funny.
We're selling tickets to the Baltimore Docket already. If you know any attorneys, anyone who's been involved in criminal justice, they're going to like the play. But anyone, I think anyone will like these stories.
I'm going to come.
Courtroom cases.
When is it? What's the dates?
Ooh, I think it's like February 15th, 16th, something like that.
You know when your own show is.
Well, sorry, I don't
know. It's Valentine's week. It's a love story.
Yeah, I think one of the nights is Valentine's Day. Yeah.
Well, there's a whole Christmas theme to Baltimore. You have no idea. I'm bringing a bunch of my friends out for the show next week. I have Dan by. We're at Gertrude's. We're at the BMA. I'm being too loud for being in a museum, which I knew was going to happen.
Did someone say that? Did someone tell you it
was
being too loud?
It was a patron. You know, I that's why I turned my mic up. Peppermint payout. These don't smell as. These really smell. Smell that. That is very. It's cinnamony.
It's cinnamony.
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah. It's a gingerbread.
Gingerbread,
yeah,
man.
So, anyway, yeah. We're giving these out. We're here at Gertrude's. We're going to be at the Hollywood Casino on Friday with Tom Kelso, which is the topic of our next segment. Dan and I are going to have a little stadium debate here. We're going to talk about the city as well. I'm going to pull out columnist Dan Rodericks.
All right.
I'm going to play Jack Lemmon.
Okay.
That's what I'm going to do. Rodericks, what do you think of this? Why do you think that? So anyway, we'll do all the Joe Friday stuff. We're here at Gertrude's at the BMA. It's brought to you by the Maryland Lottery in conjunction with our friends at Window Nation. I'm not going to wear this in the art museum. I'm going to try to be a little cultured. I was going to let my hair down. 866-90-NATION. You buy two, get two free. Big holiday offer coming your way. Our friends at Raskin Global as well as Jiffy Lube MultiCare. He's Dan. I'm Nestor. We're going to come back and we're going to talk downtown, Inner Harbor,
okay.
Westmore, John Angelo's, Steve Bisciotti and the Ravens, parking lots, future of the city. Next, we're at the BMA. Stay with us. It's Baltimore Positive.